Inbalance IT Solutions provides a unique consulting approach to transform your organization's data, cybersecurity, and hybrid cloud environments. We would like to welcome you to our podcast series we call The Balancing Act, discussing complex digital transformation. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Hey everybody out there, this is Ryan O'Halloran here from Inbalance IT Solutions. Thank you for joining our very first podcast about detection and response outcomes. I'm sitting here with Randy Watkins from Critical Start. Randy, thank you for coming, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on the inaugural episode.
Yeah, no, couldn't be more excited. Love what you guys do. Excited to share this with the audience. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the Critical Start mission.
Yeah, so Randy Watkins, CTO for Critical Start. I've been with Critical Start for 12 and a half years. We started off as a value-added reseller, much like yourself, that was really being more consultative to the customers and understanding what their issues were, what kept them awake at night, and recommending solutions. About 4 years into that journey, we found that no matter what solution we were recommending to customers, they were having problems operationalizing it. They just weren't seeing the ROI. They were no more secure for having the technology in place. So we looked at the market and we said, what can we do to help with this massive headcount shortage, the expertise shortage, and really help customers see the most out of their security investment? There were no good options. There were some staff aug firms from like the big three. There were some MSSPs, but MDR wasn't a thing. So our CEO, Rob Davis, he challenged us. He said, we're going to build a new form of MSSP. And we did. And then about a year after we did that, Gartner coined the term MDR. We identified pretty well with that. And we've subsequently kind of kept pace. So what we do is we integrate with best-of-breed technologies like Microsoft, CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, Splunk, a large portfolio. We directly integrate with them. We ingest the alerts, and then we resolve every single alert regardless of criticality and contractually obligated one-hour SLAs for TTD and TTR. So it's truly a differentiated service that was built by security practitioners for security practitioners the way we would want it to be built. And the whole premise is we're not arbitrarily accepting risk on your behalf. We are mitigating more risk per dollar spent than any other MDR on the market.
That's amazing. One of the things I know is that this market has evolved tremendously. It is saturated, right? One of the big changes is accepting other security signals into your intelligence and correlating them with like XDR, right? There's a lot of different signals you can send to the XDR. So one of the questions that our customers have a lot is, which ones are actually providing the most value? And which ones are kind of not so much, because you can get stuck there left wondering, should I send everything?
Yeah, when SIEMs first hit the scene and they were charging based on EPS, of course it was ingest everything. We want you to have the largest bill possible. And then I think there was a bit of analysis paralysis that hit the market when you started to see hundreds of thousands of false positives coming in per day. So when I look at the signals that come into a SIEM or an XDR platform, whatever it is, we primarily look for a couple of the heavy hitters. So identity, huge. Identity it's in the middle of a resurgence right now. It is kind of the pinnacle of security is wrapped around the human, especially if you're trying to push something like a zero trust architecture. The identity is key. Of course, EDR and EPP is kind of the best place for us to do our integration for detection and response capabilities. We also obviously look for email. Firewall is a big one. VPN concentrators are good. There's a handful of other signals. When we do an engagement with a customer and they're wanting us to monitor their SIEM or their XDR platform, we start off by doing a bit of a workshop engagement where we understand their environment. We want to understand what signals are available. And then we go through an exercise of, this is how much it costs to ingest these signals. We would recommend these as primary, secondary, and tertiary sources. And then we kind of allow them to adjust the sliding scale to where it meets their budget and the value add that signal gives.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like, obviously the endpoint is a fantastic source of information, but it doesn't sound like we want to leave the identity portion out. And we certainly don't want to leave things like vulnerabilities where we don't have an endpoint piece of software on them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's there's a lot of different signals that are more or less relevant for security, but there's also signals that provide context to the alerts. So you kind of break into a couple of different groups. You have your alerting sources, and then you have your contextual sources,
right,
where you can use one to investigate the other. And it's really about striking that happy medium between what's your budget and what's the return on security for the investment to ingest this specific source.
Interesting. Another thing that I'm hearing a lot about, right, is there's the traditional SIEM, right, security information event management. And then there's this enrichment from having a sort of a data lake, an AI, and machine learning outside of just the correlation and the rules, and then automating the response with things like SOAR. Can you tell us a little bit about where does SIEM live today, and where might it, how might it change moving forward in your mind with all this AI stuff getting thrown around, right? All this other machine learning, fight AI with AI. What's real right now, and what should we be thinking about as we plan for the future?
What's real right now is SIEM and XDR platforms. Data lakes have been around for a long time. I know a couple of very, very, very large organizations that are using them somewhat successfully, but it's a massive team just to support it, not including the team that needs to look at the output from it. Data lakes are a great concept. I think Palo Alto kind of started that as far as security goes, and then they almost backed away from it a little bit and turned it more into a SIEM. There's
Cortex.
Cortex. They started out with the Cortex data lake, and now it's kind of morphed into XIM, which is a little bit more SIEM-ish because that's what we're comfortable with. And there is a bit of a transformation going on where organizations and cybersecurity professionals are getting more used to looking at just raw data in a big unstructured bucket and do detections against that. And AI is definitely going to help with things like data normalization and identifying that host name is the same as host underscore name. And now we can correlate these things together. It's just not there yet. It's not mature enough. There are a handful of players in the space that are making decent strides, but they're still kind of R&D mode. And I don't know many organizations that have successfully implemented it. So I've seen, kind of the central point of security be the SIEM. I've seen it be the EDR platform, especially with some of the integrations these EDR platforms have, especially if you're on Microsoft Security Suite. And Sentinel is kind of the core of everything, and now they're coming out with their unified console, which is actually pretty sweet. And then I've also heard calls for the center of the SOC to be the MDR service. And we don't necessarily disagree with that. Of course, with our platform being transparent, we do have customers that work directly out of it. They also work out of Jira and ServiceNow. So
sure.
It's really variable depending on the organization, but SIEMs are SIEMs. They work. They are what we expected them to be. They're getting a bit more intelligent, and they're able to automate a bit more. But if you're looking for kind of that, what's that next gen SIEM? Is it a data lake? Is it, you know, AI and GPT? Eventually it will be, but right now your safe bet is a SIEM, and kind of sit down and see what players start to move in the space.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, we got the new toys, but I think we still have some work to do to reach the potential of operationalizing the tools we have.
Yeah, that's a,
which is why we're here, right? Talking enrichment, right?
Yep.
And things like that, because
that's a great point.
We're not getting those outcomes, you know? It's not fast enough. It's not good enough, right? It's not rich enough. Yet I think there's something to be said that a lot of that really just comes from having the right expertise, the right bench, right, to have it. And if you don't have it, to acknowledge that and then hire a professional that can help you manage that or co-manage that or provide you the things that you're lacking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's hundreds of these providers out there now that are doing detection and response. And that seems to be one of the common things is I don't know what they're doing. They're not fast enough. I'm not sure that they're doing the quality control and separation of duties and stuff like that. And then can they show me it's working?
Mm-hmm.
And that's to me where people really get uncomfortable is it seems like this Wizard of Oz in the behind the scenes. And you're wondering, where's the show back?
Yeah.
You know, show me the value of what you've been stopping. Show me where I'm falling down, maybe if my team's helping in this. Show me where, you know, the SOC could be potentially falling down and hold everybody accountable,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's a hard problem to solve.
Yeah.
Security is a thankless job where if nothing happens, it's a good day. So it's hard to test and show that an outcome that could have happened didn't happen because of this specific thing.
Right.
Until you get into pen testing, breach and attack simulation. There is a big epidemic of black box MDRs out there that are really just using COTS, commercial off-the-shelf software, to deliver services. And they face a lot of the same exact problems that an enterprise trying to build their own SOC would face.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's false positives. It's dealing with alerts at scale. It's collecting the right signals. It's developing the right detections. It's, you know, having threat intelligence really integrated into security operations and not, like, kind of baked into a single product or off on a stick somewhere else or just part of an ancillary investigation. When we look at how do we prove our value to the customers, we're looking at how many alerts are we resolving on your behalf? And because we're resolving every alert regardless of criticality, we assume that each alert involves some level of risk to the organization. We're showing the TTD and TTR, again, contractually obligated at 1 hour TTD and TTR, so we put those front and center. And we do show the number of administrative actions that we take. We are not managed detection, we're managed detection and response. So if the rules of engagement allow us to, we will isolate a host. We will disable a user account, revoke their session tokens, disable the, or reset their password, delete emails out of inboxes if they're found to be phishing. So we'll go through that. But really, it is a difficult problem to show. All of these attacks could have happened and they were stopped consistently, because attacks are very rarely consistent. They usually come in little batches, or they're seasonal, or they align with large global events, things like that. It is a difficult problem, but if you bake transparency into your platform and the customer can go in and see every alert you resolve, why you resolved it, what analysts worked on it, what they did to resolve it, that's where we see customers really understand the value, because they see how much work goes into every single alert that comes across their platforms.
Yeah. You mentioned a couple of things. One, the time to detect and time to respond. I guess a simple question is, what's attainable these days? You know, what is a good time to detect and respond? We're talking about, you know, the kind of the top tier there. I mean, with the threats being what they are, is that as good as it gets?
So an hour is world class. Yeah. I've had customers ask for 30-minute SLAs, and I'm like, man, if you can find somebody that offers 1 hour SLAs, I'll give you $100. Like, it doesn't exist. So 1 hour contractual SLAs, again, I believe we are still the only MDR on the market with contractual SLAs where we feel penalties if we don't meet them. And our SLAs, to make it clear, 1 hour from the point in time an alert hits our queue to the point in time we have to do something about it, whether that's dismiss it as a false positive, escalate it to the customer for additional information, or act on it as a true positive malicious threat. Larger organizations that have their own SOC, typically they're assigning SLAs based on criticality, and we have seen that out of some MDR providers. Hey, a critical, we'll get to that in 8 hours. A high, we'll get to that in 24 hours. Mediums and lows are best efforts. And generally what they're doing there is threat hunting through those mediums and lows, where it's essentially just scrolling down the page and seeing, like, oh, this one sticks
kind
out.
Kind of a cursory glance, yeah, to see if... You know, you get the bolded little guy sticking out there looking at you. Something's not right.
Exactly. Oh, encoded PowerShell. Well, let me look at this a little bit. And it's really luck of the draw that you get it in threat hunting.
Yeah.
Resolving every alert is critically important. Every alert represents risk. I don't know what a great SLA would be for resolving every alert, but I think if organizations of every size try to hit at most a 8 hour delta, that gives you kind of your after hours, you're off the clock. A lot can happen in 8 hours, but kind of what we're seeing in the threat landscape right now, and this is all subject to change and it's not consistent. There are absolutely attackers that go in, they blow past all your security, they set off all the alarms, and then they exfiltrate data. But largely what we're seeing now is interactive behavior by the attacker, low and slow attacks. They live off the land for a little while. And then they identify the data they want, they establish persistence across the environment, and then they'll finally exfiltrate data over a week to month to, you know, 6 month campaign. And that's actually great for us because we're resolving every alert. We tend to see the lower level alerts that typically don't meet the threshold of additional investigation. We can stop those attacks during that time frame. without the ransomware going across the network. So the interactive behaviors are harder to detect, but they give you more time to detect them. And if you're resolving every alert, you stand a better chance at identifying it. So I mean, to kind of shortly answer the question, I think 8 hours would be the most amount of time I would be comfortable with an alert lingering out in my environment that I haven't had time to look at.
That's great insight. No, I really appreciate that. You mentioned something else that earlier that I think is interesting. The real way to test your tools isn't to report on the tools, it's to get a pen test.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And with cyber insurance and all this other stuff that's happening, there's something to be said about the value of these kind of incident response retainers when there's not a proactive test, right? When you can kind of have your cake and eat it too and do both with other providers, and you're not really certain on the longevity of cyber insurance. Nobody really is, right?
Yeah.
They're not insuring most businesses north of 10 million. If they are, they're not getting any very little for the insurance. There's devil details in the sublimits. I'm seeing personally more customers choose to kind of fight their own fight.
Yep.
And leverage retainers like that for break glass. Hey, I absolutely need something. I need it right now. And then also for that proactivity, like you mentioned, let's really do an assume breach scenario and figure out once they get past that first email what they can do.
Yep.
And that's the real test, right?
Cyber insurance really throws a lot of security strategies out the window. I mean, there are, I've talked to a handful of customers that say, hey, we're doing self-insure. And then I talked to a handful of customers that said, we would love to do self-insure, but our third-party providers and our upstream and downstream providers, they require us to have it. But when it comes to like testing your security controls and really making sure your posture is acceptable, nothing beats a good pen test. I mean, breach and attack simulation will work as far as testing individual security controls to make sure something is properly implemented. But having a red team do a black box or, I mean, it doesn't matter, gray box, white box, whatever. Have somebody break into your network and find those holes that attackers are going to find. Give them some cookies to go out and snatch. Give them some trophies to go pursue. You know, set some rules of engagement around basic things that you know are going to work, like phishing. I think is one of those things, like, we don't need to test it. We know you're going to be successful phishing. We're just going to start doing user awareness education and do as much as we can on that front. Put in place an email tool, test that with a BAS. But really, the red team is quintessential. Purple teaming it is great if you can find somebody to do the purple team where you're doing kind of red team, blue team, your spy versus spy type stuff. But the end result of that should be some level of incident response. So great, we have this, let's fix the holes we can, but let's pretend this was a real attack. Now, how would we have gone through this and responded? And make sure you're involving legal counsel, you're involving your HR and PR, you're involving, your, of course, your security team, your executives that are going to have to do news briefs, mock press releases, the whole nine yards. That really does come in handy in a break glass scenario.
Yeah, and it's funny, something as simple as an email compromise from one of your third parties that spams out your own contact list, that situation comes up and they're like, what do we say? And who sends that email?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And maybe we should have had that ready in a place that they could go to ask questions and, you know. So, yeah, it's definitely a complicated space. And I think even some that have good insurance don't really understand a lot of their options.
Yeah.
You know, which can lead to problems too. Next thing I think that maybe we can touch on. So earlier you had mentioned how much goes into setting up a good SOC, right, and detection spot. It's a lot. And some of these tools do a decent job of, you know, kind of preparing it to get you started. There's a lot of discussion around Microsoft, right? And in my opinion, that is now, to me, a viable product. However, it does not seem that, it seems to be the worst inclined to actually come out of the box with the work done that you described. It seems like you need more work done to make it work for you the way that you're expecting. What are your thoughts on that for people that are evaluating things? I've seen everything from, hey, we have endpoint, you know, Defender for endpoint, but they don't realize there's one for servers. Hey, we have emails, we have Microsoft email, but they don't realize they don't even have anti-phishing and attachment protection because it's not included by default. And then there's Defender for all this other stuff. And they might already have some of those things, and they're out there looking for what are all these other products that can do this? Well, you didn't even look. You know, so tell me a little bit about your thoughts on where the world is with Microsoft. Because, you know, for whoever's writing the check, if we already have it and it's more cost effective, there's going to have to be a hell of a reason why not.
Yeah, so save the hate mail. I am a big fan of Microsoft. I'm very bullish on them as a security company. We've been working with them since they were the punchline to the joke of security, and we've really seen them come to fruition.
It's really come along, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and trigger alert for all those people that are like, oh, well, Microsoft's responsible for the vulnerabilities. That's not how software development works. That's not how large organizations function.
Right.
They're not purposefully putting in vulnerabilities, and it's that's just not how it works. So Microsoft as a security suite has gone from zero to hero very quickly, and $13 billion a year investment will tend to do that. When you look at Microsoft, it takes a substantial amount of professional services to stand up and configure fully for your environment. You can do the basics pretty easy. And just turning it on and getting alerts, no problem. Configuring conditional access policies, just-in-time provisioning, OAuth, I mean, all that stuff does take some serious manpower.
For sure.
But I've never seen a company as dedicated as Microsoft at funneling resources to its customers to fully operationalize that security suite. So they will give ESIF money, they'll do workshops, they give a ton of incentives to their partners to do professional services for their customers to drive the utilization of that portfolio. When you look at each one of the individual products, they're all fairly good on their own. Defender for Identity and Azure Active Directory Identity Protection is phenomenal. It is great. Absolutely great suite. Defender for Endpoint is a little bit cumbersome to navigate until you realize that you have like 9 different products all sandwiched into one suite. And then it's like, well, it's going to have a lot of settings. Sentinel, I wish I had that when I was doing more of the security operations and threat hunting side of things. It is an amazing SIM, and it's going to be better with their unified portal that they're coming out with. Defender for Office is one that, I mean, if you're using it today, you're kind of second guessing it. And I do see that augmented quite a bit with something like Abnormal.
Abnormal, yeah.
It's a great product.
Yeah.
Awesome on the BEC front.
There's the threat intelligence and then there's the business intelligence.
Yeah.
And it seems to be in the market that there's this theme around if we understand what's normal and what's not, that we can be more secure than just knowing what is.
Yes. Yep. And
right. I mean, and it's interesting and it makes sense, right? Because everybody's their own unique snowflake of a profile in terms of the behaviors they have and the apps they use and the things they don't even know about. So it only makes sense that would be a challenge to overcome. That would be a great use case for machine learning where things like pen tests, you don't really want that fully automated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. The AI's got a lot of promise, but we still need people to train that. And attackers are going to think like people. They're going to think for the weakest link. They're not going to think, you know, linearly and stuff like that. So, you know, I think that using it for what it's really good at, things like this, like what they're doing, is probably what's going to make us more secure than ever, right?
Yeah, I mean, NLP, native language processing, has been around for a long time, and it's been in use by a lot of different email companies. But Abnormal was really the first one to bring the tags to the forefront and show the reason why they've kind of classified something the way it has. So that augmenting Defender for Office, 100%, love it. There are a lot more other kind of Microsoft Defender things out there. What I will say is, that decision, you're 100% right. It's made with the CIO and the CFO. And once they made that decision, security needs to use it or figure out a way to operationalize it because it is very difficult to justify spend that's going to compete with it outside of that. And I would encourage any customer that's having difficulty implementing it or they're thinking about it, talk to your Microsoft rep. Talk to your ASAs, your CSAs, your cloud security architects. They have a ton of resources available that can explain what they're doing. They have cost vendor rationalization assessments that they'll do for free. They'll pay ESIF money to get implemented. So if you're having trouble adopting Microsoft security platform, just ask Microsoft for some help. They have a ton of it out there. They have training and everything else. But I do see a large shift away from best of breed to best of portfolio. That platformula approach that Dave DeWalt made famous with McAfee so long ago, is it's starting to come full circle, and security is about to repeat itself.
I like that, the best of breed versus best of portfolio, because that's really what's going on.
Yes.
You know, best of breed bolting on is not getting effective outcomes. It's just not. So everyone's like, well, what's good enough? And who's really good at that particular thing? Because that's becoming more difficult, you know?
Yeah. If you look at the players that are really leading the space in platformulas outside of Microsoft, they all started with a whole suite of third-party integrations that they could tie in and be on a stick, and we're going to share data. And now they've all moved to, we need to centralize all the signals so we can actually do processing on top of it. So SentinelOne bought a SIM, CrowdStrike bought a SIM, Palo Alto bought a SIM, even after Nikesh said a million times, we're not going to buy a SIM, we're not going to build a SIM. They bought and built a SIM. So it's definitely becoming evident that centralizing all that data for processing by a primary manufacturer who also has direct purview into the endpoint. Now they're all coming out with their own identity plays as well. Identity, endpoint, cloud apps, those are the three bigs. And you can see the portfolios that are starting to shape up, and they're stealing the business away from everyone else. If you're not on CrowdStrike, SentinelOne, Microsoft, or Palo Alto, you're probably looking at one of those four.
That's fair. That's fair. I guess the last thing, you know, before we break, one of the things, I think this is encouraging, a lot of these things, for people to know that internally, where I'm a lean IT, you know, staff, or I'm a security analyst, or my job's now to transition into security, right? That's happening a lot of places. I'm seeing IT leadership kind of offload the transformative task with much more of their particular role or responsibility within the network. But that also means that they're not as close to it, right? They're giving more autonomy. They're giving more leeway and decision-making, if you will. And they're looking at this like, this is my new job, so I want to do this really well. What would you say out there to the folks that are super lean, that are like, listen, I want to know that there's stuff out here that can do this. If Microsoft's forced on me, I can do this. If I have solutions already, I can get started today. If I'm not getting what I want out of the solution, what would you say to those folks?
Learn how to leverage your partners. Imbalance is a great example. You guys are a fantastic partner for us. And the thing that I like the most about Imbalance is it reminds me of Critical Start in the early days. We want to understand the customers, understand their pain points, understand their resources and what they have to put into it, and figure out the best way to structure that. And if it's a different security architecture, a different product portfolio, great, we can facilitate that. If it's professional services engagements, you can go in there and help them do the implementation. So for smaller shops getting started, really leaning into security, understand frameworks and alignment to them. CSF is a great place to start. They have a ton of playbooks to operationalize CSF. So I would start there. I'd build a strong relationship with your value-added reseller. And if you don't have one, Imbalance is a great partner to work with. And I would look for some third parties to help augment. Where I usually see smaller security shops get buckled down is trying to do the tier one and two. They put in place a couple of products. Those products start to generate alerts. They haven't finished implementing the rest of their security stack, but they can't ignore these alerts. So then they get stuck in this pattern of like, we have to put this on hold so we can look at this. And then they get this implemented. Now they have double the amount of alerts coming in. And it really just starts to become
fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah. Alert fatigue, total resource consumption. It stops them dead in their tracks. So it would really be aligned to a framework, learn how to leverage third parties, including value-added resellers, MDR providers, professional services organizations.
Awesome. Randy, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. And to everyone out there, right, Imbalance is here. Critical Start's here. Happy to help you. We start left with security. We're not shifting there. I hope you have a great day. See you on the next one.
Imbalance IT Solutions wants to thank you for listening and invite you to join us for the next episode in our podcast series. Remember, Imbalance IT Solutions can help you transform your business's technology, and we welcome you to reach out to us for more information on our website at imbalanceit.com. See you on the next one.